Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Life Chat with Pip and Bill. This is still the month of March. We are still discussing Women's History Month. And today we have with us two extraordinary females who have trailblazed in an industry that is mainly men dominated. And we want to hear from them, what's it like from Beth, for instance, what's it like being a female engineer back in her time when she started out in this field, in this profession? And then we will be speaking with Annabelle in regards to how it is currently, being that she's from a younger generation. So ladies, welcome to Life Chat with Viv and Bill, and introduce yourselves and say a little bit about who you are, where you live, whatever you want to share with the audience and so forth. So let's jump in. Who wants to start? Beth, what about you?
Sure, I'll start. My name is Beth Margerson, and I work for a company by the name of Calpine Corporation. And that company is an independent power producer. So that means that they have a lot of power plants all over the country, and they're not associated with a regular utility, like in this area, Delmarva Power. It's an independent company. And I did work for a utility company until about 10 years ago when Calpine bought out the company I was working for. And I have been working for them ever since. And actually, I've been working in the power industry for my entire career from the time I graduated from college, way back when.
So do you have kids?
Oh, yes. Yes. I have two children. They are, one is 31 and the other is 29. My son is interested in following my footsteps, and he wants to work in power. And my daughter is a physical therapist. She is currently back getting her PhD.
Awesome. So welcome, Beth.
Thank you.
Annabelle.
Okay. My name is Annabelle. I come from the island of Puerto Rico in the Caribbean. I went to school for chemical engineering, and I was hired directly from school to work with a chemical company called DuPont. It's one of those that are 200 years old, and their culture and how they go about things is very conservative, also innovative. And then I spent 13 years in there, many roles in operations, in engineering, as a process engineering, also in leadership roles in the business supply chain. And currently I moved into Chemours, which is the spinoff of DuPont, and I just joined as a production leader. I do have a daughter, and she's also wired in the science arena, and I'm excited about that. And that's a little bit about me.
Okay. Thank you, ladies, very much. And it is, I will join my co-host to say it's a pleasure to have you. And I just can't wait to hear the things that you have to share with us today. And my first question is, what motivated you to get in the field that you are in? One, as a mechanical engineer, Beth, and Annabelle, as a chemical engineer. What motivated you?
That's very interesting. My father was actually a professor of electrical engineering at Lehigh, and for obvious reasons, I went to Lehigh. One of his benefits was I didn't have to pay tuition. I did not start out in engineering. And probably when I started college, I had very little sense for what an engineer did. However, it was a big engineering school. I had friends who were engineers and didn't know where I wanted to go with my original major. And a big incentive was it seemed to me that I would be able to get a good job after 4 years of college, because I wasn't really interested in going to a lot of college. So I think that as I got more and more into the major and I joined clubs in college, I started to really like engineering and particularly like the power industry. So I may have not had a really strong reason to get into it initially, other than really wanting to get to be in a major where I could get a good job. It appealed to me more and more the more I got into the major.
Thank you.
For me, was as simple as, what is the hardest engineering? So I was back, actually, I knew I wanted to be an engineer back in middle school. And I'm the first person in my family to actually want to go to college. And I'm the only engineer right now in my family history. And I remember just talking to a friend and just, she was telling me about her brother going for chemical engineering. And I'm like, what is that? And she's like, I really don't know, but it seems really hard. And that was to the extent that I thought it. I'm a little bit on the challenge. Like when there is a challenge, I go for it. And so I actually redirected my steps from ballerina. I was actually on a school in Puerto Rico for ballet. And then I made the transition to a school that was specialized in math and science. And that became very real quickly for me that was what I wanted to pursue. And I went full blown, full force in there. And I was able to get to the College of Engineering of Puerto Rico, which is very hard to get in there. So I was pretty blessed to be able to redirect my steps in a way that set me up for what was next in my journey as a professional.
Wow. Very interesting. Thank you.
Yeah. And I was just wondering, can you guys explain to the audience what a chemical and a mechanical engineering is?
I think we're versatile, though. I would agree. Many engineers that have been in mechanical, like a mechanical engineer, that's their training. And they are designing processes just like me as a chemical engineer. And I have seen electrical engineers doing the same thing. So we are, I think, very versatile discipline or, you know, training. We can do anything.
I agree, because it was funny because I've had a lot of, even though I've worked in the power industry, I've had a lot of different jobs and I've taken on a lot of things, and it's the kind of job where you never really get completely comfortable because you're always getting something new, a new challenge, you're always having to learn something new. I was working with somebody who quoted somebody else who said, you know what, whatever the job is, just give me an engineer and I know that they can learn and they'll figure it out and they'll be able to do it. So that's kind of where my career has gone. Yeah. So I've been put into a lot of situations where I just kind of had to figure things out. But you're right, we're very flexible. We can, you know, we can do a lot of things, but I think we're used to challenges, so we can use our mind. We can go into a brand new situation and be able to figure out what we need to do to get the job done.
Yeah. So the chemical engineer would be more focused on turning the concept that is found in a research and development lab. And it's very, it could be a product, any type of products, from electronics to rubber to really anything that you can think of that could be mass produced. And in my case, you know, I had the opportunity to be in the chemical industry, which is purely chemical engineering. And so most of us spend a lot of time on the design of the process and vessels and equipment that are integrated into the mass production of that product. But we don't stay there usually, because what Beth was alluding was the skill set that we develop as far as problem solving. We have, I think we're individuals, we get trained, and also, you know, just through the work experience, we get very highly, we are highly collaborative. And so we not only just do think alone, but we can also pull different disciplines to get us to where we need to be. So in order for us to do a manufacturing facility, we would need people like Beth, electrical engineers, different functions or disciplines in engineering to be able to establish a full-blown manufacturing facility. So it doesn't only come from chemical engineers, but it comes from many disciplines that come together to that mass production. So that in kind of in a summary, that's where usually a chemical engineer does at the beginning of their career.
Yeah. Mechanical engineers are very flexible. They tend to work a lot with equipment. And I guess process too, but more like in my case, my education perfectly prepared me for the kind of work that I do, because a lot of the class work had to do with power generation cycles, steam cycles and things like that. So it was, and that's also the kind of things that I enjoy, but also you get into, particularly in a plant environment, there's all kinds of things that you have to understand and work with, from one end of the power generation process. It's a process, just like what you're doing, Annabelle, but it's just a slightly different, but you, like you said, you can get involved in any part of the process. And I've done the same thing. I've worked side by side with electrical engineers, with, we even have chemical engineers. In my department, I believe we just got two new chemical engineers that work, that we work with now. So, yeah, you can work with anybody, but I think one of the things about mechanical engineering is your engineering electives span a broad spectrum of engineering.
Yeah, so now Beth, you started in this field, and you say basically by, trying to feel out where you want to be type of thing. So how was it when you started school and being a mechanical engineer in this particular field? How many females were in it, and how was it for you?
So it was, let me see, in I think in mechanical engineering it was maybe 20% female, and that was probably on the higher side. However, I had women friends who were engineers, so there was, even though there weren't as very many in relationship to the number of men, there were still plenty of women in there. And I don't know if I had an advantage, but certain professors knew who I was because they knew my father worked there. So so that, I don't know if that made it better or worse, but that, I guess there were enough women in the field that I didn't feel that outnumbered. And I guess I always have been able to get along with a lot of different folks. So that was never, in college, that was never an issue for me.
How about you, Annabelle? Were there?
Yeah, so I guess on my generation, or I guess when later, a little later on the 80s, 90s, I think there was a huge wave of empowerment for women in Puerto Rico, that a lot of my graduation class was 85% women.
Wow.
But that was only the case in Puerto Rico. I actually had the opportunity to do an internship in University of Delaware in the chemical engineering department, and I was the only one in there. Wow. And so it was very interesting to adjust from just having to be among many of us to be the one in there. In addition to that, you know, just knowing how many women graduate from engineering degrees in Puerto Rico, that has become the attraction, if you will, or the focal point of recruitment of companies like DuPont and big companies like GM and many, many, many companies, Fortune companies, to go to Puerto Rico to recruit minority. So we kind of had an advantage, if you will, just by wanting to study and graduate from an engineering degree from Puerto Rico, because we were pulling a lot of those companies, and the companies were meeting those minority numbers into their HR statistics. I was part of the strategy when I was working in DuPont for recruitment. I was the lead recruiter for University of Puerto Rico for the campus, the Maya West campus. And it's incredible how many women is there on a job fair. And so it's definitely a sweet spot if you're looking for hitting your numbers as a minority to consider, you know, Puerto Rico as part of United States, and it's a state that is odd if you compare to other states in United States where women in the field are very limited or almost nothing. So that's kind of like the difference, I think, that maybe Beth and I, you know, just because where I come from, you know, and the culture that was, I guess, transitioning into more empowered woman, if you will. Mm-hmm. And those opportunities were open to us to get education and then get opportunity quickly to graduate and start in the workforce right away, because, you know, that advantage that we were born with, I guess, we were given at that moment. So it was different experience for sure. So that's my experience as graduating. As far as working in the company, in a company like DuPont is a global company, and joining the workforce, and it was and then the roles that I have been given the opportunity to be in, there's always me and everybody else, and my progression in my career has also put me in leadership roles where it's not expected for me to be that young or look this young and be leading a whole team with a broad spectrum of experiences. So that has also caused a lot of challenges for me to prove myself, show them that I understand and I know what I'm doing, even educating myself, you know, how can I get ahead of the issue by educating myself? And it's actually sharpening my problem solving skills. Mm-hmm. Because before I even address the issue, I have to address the people. So it has been very good in a sense that I'm able to maneuver some of the mindsets and behaviors and bias towards mm-hmm. us in leadership positions where required a lot of collaboration and people trusting me to make the right choices.
Right, right. Okay, so it's unbelievable that now in the 21st century you are experiencing that. So how about you, Beth? How were you received in the field as a female? Maybe 30 years ago?
Yes. So I graduated in the early 80s. So that's an interesting question. As a matter of fact, I'm mentoring a student, and so I've been talking about my experiences, and has brought a lot of memories back. So I was an intern in between my junior and senior year of college, and I worked at Bethlehem Steel because that's where I lived at the time, that's where I was going to school, and even back then, Bethlehem Steel was not doing all that great. I think, you know, they were on the beginning of their decline, but the folks there that I was working that I was working with were very, very old school, and they were not very receptive to a woman engineer at all. It was not always the most pleasant place to work, I have to say. The folks there were very backwards. However, the thing that it did do was really prepare me for an experience working in a plant, because I knew that's where I wanted to be, in some kind of facility. So a year later, I graduated from college and I got a job, and I was working at a power plant, and it was much different. It was almost 180 degrees different. You know, people were respectful, people were nice. It was just that, you know, they treated me professionally. They recognized, you know, even though I was a new engineer, and of course, you know, it's tough. You get the not the greatest jobs when you're a new engineer, but that has nothing to do with whether you're a man or a woman. That has to do with the fact that you're new. So you're going to be doing some of the, you know, less, you know, attractive jobs.
The mundane things.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's a great way to put it. More mundane things, but it was just a completely different environment. So I think that my experience at Bethlehem Steel, while it was not really great, it prepared me for the worst. And when I got my final job and it was much better than that, it was quite a relief. And so, it was the type of thing I liked. I never, you know, I liked being out in a power plant environment. I never liked staying in an office. You know, I never worried about getting a little bit dirty or being hot and sweaty or anything like that. So that was great for me. That was, and so I really enjoyed that experience. And from that point on, I got to do a lot of different jobs.
So you were not just only a pretty face, right? You were seen as a important contributing member in the company, because I've heard it said by some women that when they find themselves in certain positions, they are looked upon, you know, with those Google eyes and as a sex symbol rather than as a contender, you know.
So I would say that was true when I was spending my summer internship at Bethlehem Steel, but definitely not. definitely not when I got my first job. You know, okay. It was interesting because at the time when I was hired, we worked in a room full of engineers, and the oldest one was out of school probably 3 years. And today that's kind of unusual, but it was just this big room. And there was a bunch of us in there. And actually there was another woman engineer that was working along with me, but it was like seven of us. And you know, there was no difference in the kind of jobs that I was assigned to versus anybody else. We all did the same thing, the same type of work.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What about you, Annabelle?
Well, my experience, I think, is because of the culture of my company or the company that I used to work. The little representation of women in the roles or the groups or functions in the company, I can tell you that I cause a little bit of disturbance because of my bright personality. I am very colorful. And also very bubbly. And when we are in meetings and we're talking about real matters, it doesn't mean that I need to be serious and all. You know, I'm a little soft, you know, and I like to smile, be nice, you know. And so I think sometimes it's different. I had to kind of tune it down a little bit and always know my audience, you know, who am I, you know, walking into, and what, you know, who will be in the meeting. But I have always told myself that I don't change who I am. You know, I don't fit in someone else, you know, standards, if you will. that as I accept in them, they need to accept me. And so I have always come with, you know, with that mindset. So I will still come very vibrant and colorful, and I still laugh, you know, and I still, you know, I just, you know, I think fun is good, you know, I'm always the odd kind of. So, it was different, definitely, you know, and I think as I kept working with the team and the team got to know me, then they didn't want to let me go, you know, because what I bring is much more than a face, a look, you know, it's getting it done, you know, results, you know, collaboration, mm-hmm. the thought process, you can be nice, you don't need to be, you know, a little, so, you know, hard on people, you know, you can still get the same things, you know, and respect, you know, I feel also you know, you come into this room with some people's biases, you know, what you should know and what you should not know, you know, I think I also told to myself, and it's something that I have a voice, if you invite me, I have a voice. And that's something that as a woman, as a minority, as a whatever, you know, when people say, oh, you're a woman, or, you know, oh, you know, you're good, Annabelle, because you're a woman. And I'm like, no, I'm a person that thinks, have educated myself. I have developed my skill set, and I am the same as you because I have long hair and I look different. I'm a woman. I don't want you to compare me. It's not how, you know, it should be. So that has been something that I have to, as I walk and as my years pass and my journey as a professional in the chemical industry and as an engineer, I have always have to address. So even right now in my new role, that's something that they're looking for me. You know, I'm the one woman in there. And so, you know, just being assertive and getting their trust is something that I am trying, you know, it's something that it's my focus right now, but not losing myself, you know, because I need to meet those expectations. So I think in that sense, I have always dealt with that because they're looking at me and they're looking at, you know, like, you don't belong here because of my personality. You know, but you know, I start getting things done and my education starts showing up and my skill set is like, oh, thanks God that you're here. You know, so it's interesting that that's something that comes always in my way, but it is what it is.
So yeah. Do you still find that, Beth, in your arena? Because you're also around a lot of men in your area. Normally when I see you around that drawing board, by the way, Beth and I used to work together for Calpine Corporation. But every time I see you with a room full of men doing your drawing, but do they really take you seriously, or do you find that you always have to prove yourself, as Annabelle just said?
I guess.
Or do you just have it easy?
No, I think, well, in the department that I'm in now, there's, I would say it's 50-50 men and women. However, I have, you know, prior to that, I was in a field that was dominated by men. And throughout my career, I can remember, you know, hundreds of times I was the only woman in the room. And I think there's a little bit of that, you know, but I think once you start talking, you start, just like Annabelle was saying, it's the same process. Once you start talking, once they understand that you know what you're talking about and what you're doing, it kind of falls away. You know what I mean? They forget, that you're the only woman in the room. And I have to agree with Annabelle. I'm the same way. I wasn't gonna, you know, and I've kind of had that attitude from the beginning. I'm not gonna change the person that I am. I'm not gonna be, you know, mm-hmm. I'm not gonna act like somebody else does just because it's their personality, or I think that's the way I'm supposed to act. I'm going to be me. I'm going to, you know, be bubbly, smile, whatever. I think the other thing, and I don't know if Annabelle would agree, when I first started, you know, there was a lot of
male engineers who started, and I can remember one person in particular, they seem to be afraid to ask questions and to learn, you know, the best way to learn is to ask questions and understand how things work. I asked a lot of questions to the point where people used to tease me about it. I always have asked a lot of questions. And I think I learned a lot that way. And I would hear side comments about somebody else who didn't and acted like they knew everything. And they weren't really fooling anybody. So, you know, I was never afraid to ask questions, and I was never, you know, conscious of thinking that I had to know everything.
Okay. Wow. Here's a million-dollar question. We're not going to skirt the issue. There was a company that I worked with, and we were told never to discuss salaries. Now, as a woman, do you think that your salary was comparable to your male counterpart?
Me, yes. Yes. I never got the impression that I was paid any differently. You know, we were paid according to our grade, and, you know, and for the most part, I've gotten good reviews throughout my career. So no, I don't have the sense that I was paid less because I was a woman.
Okay. In my field. Very good. What about you, Annabelle?
I don't think so. And the case that I want to share was, you know, me getting laid off and me being in the looking for a job in the field of engineering or leadership positions. I was hired into this last position in a much, much higher rate or annual payment. Salary than where I left. And that brought, like, that just like blew me off, because I was thinking, I'm like the same skill set, you know, and I go into reviews every year, and I am like, I don't only meet the expectation, but I do even more than, you know, what the set of like things that that person thought that I needed to meet as a minimum essential. But then I go above and beyond, and I still like little by little going up in the salary, you know, ladder. And then, you know, this time comes and then I get hired in a way different pay level, mm-hmm. and with the same skills, with the same experience. Mm-hmm. So I am in my case, in my scenario, I can see the difference in pay, definitely. If that company was not wanting to hire me or pay me on that, but then the other company, it is with the same skill set, I just don't think that that makes sense to me. It was really obvious to me that I was not being compensated, you know, the same way. I can also tell you that many times that I have been focused on, okay, so here's where I am, this is where I want to go. I'm very focused on, you know, things like that. You know, when I set a goal, I kind of go into, okay, how am I going to go about it, you know? And I can see, you know, males going ahead and maybe having those opportunities where I'm like, hey, you know, I'm here, you know, preparing, you know, and it's interesting how sometimes you get caught up with the game. And so it's sometimes really exhausting, mm-hmm. because there have been time that I'm just like, oh my gosh, you know, maybe I should not even focus on that anymore because I'm not longer enjoying what I'm doing. And that's when it triggered me. I'm like, I'm not even caring for this. I'm just going to do my job. I am going to enjoy. And if it happens, it happens. But it's kind of sad, right? It's kind of sad that you kind of have to like embrace, you know, some of these things that maybe it should be more encouraging. It should be more promoting you to do even more, you know, be more productive. But it was, I can see there's definitely a difference. I don't have the numbers or facts to assure or say, you know, that that is not real. But in my case, what I share with you with the same skill set, I mean, two companies, totally different, a huge gap of salary. And that doesn't make sense, but that's the case.
And you know, Vilma, I find this very interesting because I expected the things that Annabelle is saying, I expected Beth to say. And she being that she's from a younger generation, Annabelle, and you are facing all these things now in the 21st century, whatever it may be. And Beth is like, oh, well, it's fine. I think I'm getting the same pay. You're from a different generation. So I'm really like, finding very interesting that I'm hearing the flip where I'm thinking we should have been much further, like Vilma said earlier, mm-hmm. than where we are right now with you being younger, that you wouldn't be dealing with, number one, that pay scale not being the same. You're not dealing with, you have to keep on proving yourself over and over again. And there's so many women in the field right now, but you still have to do this and being passed over and whatever it may be. This is really interesting to me that this is still going on.
Mm-hmm. It still goes on.
Yeah.
It goes on. Yeah. In many other fields, you know, yeah.
I don't know if I got passed over. I don't know. And every industry is different, I think.
So in reference to now, being that we talked about your past, I'm sorry, Vilma, if you had one more question in regards to
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
Yes. Well, my other question is discipline. You have both been in supervisory positions. Mm-hmm. Did you find it difficult to discipline, especially when it was a male employee?
That's an interesting question. It can be. I was in another position actually before our company got bought out. I had four people working for me and they were all men, all four of them. Three of them were great. They were really good. They were hard workers. They were innovative. They really were. The fourth one, it was a struggle with him a little bit. But what made me feel good is everybody felt the same struggle. So it could be challenging, but it was, I guess, I don't know. I think it was a little difficult to get through to this one fella and discipline him. And part of it could be my personality too. I'm not necessarily the greatest at that kind of thing.
What about you, Annabelle?
Yeah, my experience has been mostly in the ones that I am recalling as relevant to the here, mm-hmm. The topic of maybe working with someone that is a little nutty. has been through like influential leadership. I think those are the worst. When you have to work and lead a team, but yet they don't report to you and you still have to get things done. You mm-hmm. still have to work with them and find a way to make it happen. I think those experiences and roles have been a little bit more challenging, and it requires a specific skill set. And going about things, you know, when a team member or a person is not really cooperating. Mm-hmm. In my case, because I am 98% of the time the youngest, and I'm usually leading a cross-functional team, mm-hmm. and which are sometimes not only men, but older than me, mm-hmm. there is always this resistance to listen, to accept, to receive any guidance or anything that may trigger them to feel like, no, who are you and why you're even here? Why are you telling me you don't know nothing? You know, it's kind of like an immediate reject, if you will, without giving you the chance. So my way of doing that, first of all, and the two companies that I have worked for the 14 years, both are they're an advocate of respect. That's their value. So that's number one. It's just like, you want to work on a company that values, and that's their core value, respect. Why? Because in my case, where I am, you know, in positions like that, that may be in disadvantage, I can come forward and strong in correcting behaviors like that. Mm-hmm. So there is one case right now that I remember that I even have a picture of it. Someone took a picture because I guess they were taking, we were doing some installation. And so this picture came up, but that was amazing because you can see Annabelle and all these men, you know, around me, you know, with my hard hat and the PNID, the drawings and all that, right? But so I put together design basis, like a package of like how to do this, right? And I came to the field with this team to explain what was going to happen. You know, well, we're going to do this. This is what's going to happen. You know, this is the material. This is the run. This is what I'm thinking and all that. This person did not look at me. And I'm talking to this person and he's the person who's going to design that, but he's not looking at me. And I start calling his name. And he did not look at me. And then when he would ask a question from what I would say, he would talk to my colleague. Mm. And so I'm like, no, this is not happening to me. Mm-hmm. And he would again ask a question. But so I look at my colleague and my colleague look at him and say, she's the one that designed that. You need to ask her the question. So right there, you can see that core value of respect, it triggering him to kind of redirect him to me, who is the person who called the meeting, who owns the information and who is giving that, guidance on what is to happen in the field. So it didn't stop there. He continued to talk to him and I just stopped the meeting and I said, look, if you're going to behave like that, we stop the meeting right now. So I go into bold movements. I'm a bold person like that. I don't tolerate that. And I walk away. I actually walked away. It's sad that has to happen when, you know, there's no reason for that. It to me, it was very surreal that I had to experience that. But I don't have, so in situations like this, you have to cut it right there, right in the root. Because it happens to me, it happens to the next engineer, it might be a habit, who knows? But to be a game changer, you have to realize where respect line is and go for it. Mm-hmm. Whether you're in a company that core values respect or not, we need to lay the line. So that has happened to me several times where my colleague, male colleague, may not even address me, and then I had to like completely stand off and leave the meeting. Or, you know, also, you know, on the side, I don't know, Beth, if you have this experience, they're more open to talk about anything and everything. And you actually become one of the men, if you will, like, you know, there is really no difference between you and the men. So a lot of these conversations are like raw. Really, really passionate, you know, like you're like, wait a second, are you screaming or are you telling, you know, like what is happening here? You know, the level of interactions and sometimes personalities are really out there, you know. So there has been times that I just have stand up and you say, you need to calm down right now. If we need to take a break, and these are my meetings, you need to take a break, we take a break, but it's enough. So, but again, this, I think, just working on an environment like that and having to kind of grow them there in a way that you're still different, but also bringing order. So, yeah, it's very uncomfortable, you know, at times that, you know, you're in there and, you know, either they're disrespecting you or disrespecting your meeting. It's at the end of the day, they're not respecting you. There's several times that I can tell you. And also, I Vilma, you mentioned about sex, you know, figure image, or, you know, because women and all these things. I also have had, you know, people just making comments, and, you know, that's also something that it needs to cut off right in the root, you know. It can, and I do it for me, but I also do it for the other that comes behind me that may not have my personality to just shop it off and just go for it, you know. But I sometimes I get concerned. It's like, oh my gosh, you know, how long this person has been doing that, you know? It's over, you know, this person is over. So there's definitely some that test, you know, you know, your womanly characteristics, in the sense of, like, you know, it's just.
Yeah. Vivian, you had a question. Thank you.
And thank you guys for setting the pace for the next generation that we can have, hopefully it'll be better. But my next question was, you know, gearing now to Women History Month, and being that this is Women History Month, what would you say, what do you think of it, of Women History Month, number one?
You
do
know,
you celebrate it? Do you take part? Are you appreciative of it? What's your thoughts on this?
I am very proud of how far we have gotten. I just remember on the 60s, women were fighting for their rights, and it's not too long ago, you know? When I learned about history, I was like really young, and I would be like, oh my God, those are ages. And now when you know, I am a couple decades in, and it's just like, oh my gosh, that just happened like a couple years ago, you know? You put things in perspective, and then, you know, I sit on this, you know, place where I have a voice, and I am here, you know, in the same place as many other colleagues. They're brilliant, you know, and I'm sharing that table. I'm in that table. Amazes me. It amazes me. And I'm very proud, and every single woman that have contributed to change the status quo, that they have not withhold, you know, change, you know, like an idea from a, you know, the idea and the thinking, and then not even that, but the drive, you know, to make it happen. I'm impressed. I'm proud. That makes me proud.
Great.
I really like the concept of women's history, because I think that there are a lot of women in our past that have really made big contributions. And I think that they're just not recognized. Mm-hmm. That I think that it's an opportunity to really understand some of the contributions that women have made in all fields,
right?
Including engineering and medicine and research, that I don't think that we would know otherwise. I think it's just a great opportunity to learn. And I love history anyway. I'm a real history buff. And I have a real interest in women and, you know, women throughout history and how they've contributed and how they've made a difference. And I think it's great. And I think there's a lot of women out there in our path that have paved the way for us. And I don't know if we really understand the contributions and the sacrifices that they've made.
I was going to close with, I don't take it for granted.
I don't either. I don't either.
I'm like, wow, thank you. You know, mm-hmm. And I make a commitment to myself to make sure that whoever comes behind me, it's coming in strong. So, you know, even my daughter, I mentioned she loves science and the brainstorming mm-hmm. and how she goes about it and all that. I love, you know, and I just like, Sophie, you know, you can do everything, you know, you can just, you have to set your mind and don't give mm-hmm. up. Like, so that's another thing. You can be intimidated by many things, mm-hmm. but you keep trying, you keep pushing. No, okay, what's the next thing that I can do? So definitely it's a way that, you know, the older generation paid for us to be here where we are today and have a voice on, you know, things that really impact the world. Like, it's incredible.
Right.
So who are any ladies that have inspired you throughout your life that you can think of real quick before we end and wrap up?
Okay, well, this one is like, because it's going to be live and I have never said thank you to her. She's my science teacher from elementary school. She was the one that I remember, she just make me fall in love with science. And I remember just going like this in my cubicle, in my chair, like, wow, you know? And I believe she put a lot of, you know, love to teach and show her love for science and understanding and learning and knowledge. And I appreciate that because that kind of set me up for wanting to know and be curious about things. And I believe that, you know, she was one of those drivers for me. Her name is Mrs. Quinones.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And you, Beth?
Well, I, like I said, I am a real history buff and I really like researching women in history. That is one of my hobbies. And I guess, you know, one of the women that I really admire is Marie Curie. And she's one of the few women who actually not earned two Nobel Peace Prizes, not one, but two. Mm-hmm. And I think, she had a lot of barriers. She had to move from her native Poland to France, even to be able to go to school. One of the things that she did do that I think not too many people realize is that during World War I, she actually created an X-ray truck. And she was the first person to be able to take X-rays into the field, into the battlefield, into these battlefield hospitals, and was able to X-ray the injured soldiers. And so they were able to figure out where the bullets were, where the shrapnel was, and actually do the surgery. And without her innovation, and she did that all on her own. She borrowed money from her friends. She invested her own money. She created this vehicle and she took her 18-year-old daughter out into the field, out into the battlefield with her. Mm-hmm. And then between the two of them, they ended up training over 300 other people to be able to operate these X-ray machines. And that was just to me, a huge contribution. So that's just one example. There's hundreds of examples like that.
Yeah,
out there, just people,
bunch of ladies behind you too.
Well, there's Marie right there.
Awesome. So you both have actually, one of the questions that I know we would have asked is, what would you say to the next female coming up? And I think you basically gave that answer, Annabelle. And Beth, what would you tell a young woman now who wants to step into a field? It may not be chemical engineer, it may not be mechanical engineer, but it may be some other field that is predominantly male dominated. What would you, say to that person?
What I would say is you know, you can go to school. You are just like everybody else. And let your knowledge, your skills, and your abilities speak for themselves. Mm-hmm. And if you do that, you are just, you're the same as the, your male colleagues. You are just as qualified. Let your capabilities speak for themselves. And I think that other than a few outliers, if you let your abilities speak for themselves, you will succeed and you'll be able to work in this field. I mean, I have, like I said, I've worked in this field. I've been the, you know, many times the only woman, not always, but many times. And I guess I've been fortunate. I've worked with great teams and I've been accepted, and I've always believed in letting my capabilities speak for themselves.
So is there anything else you ladies want to say before we wrap up?
No, I hope that, you know, there's a generation out there. In my new job, it's great. I've been working in the department, my current department, for about 3 years. But what's wonderful is to see these new women coming up, joining the department. That's what's so great about this. There's a lot of younger folks that we work with, and I love working with them. And so there's a couple of new folks that I've either worked with or will work with them. That's one of the things that I really, really enjoy, and is mentoring. I mentor a high school student. I like mentoring new employees. That's what really, I think that's really one of my favorite things is really helping other folks and educating other folks.
Great, wonderful.
Anything else, Bella, before saying the last word?
No, I just know that coming, when history, you know, we're always writing history. I know we're going to be reading about you, Beth, and and your contribution. And as just the way you love to read history, Beth, and read about all these great women, you know, there's going to be some little girl somewhere, Beth, who will be reading about you and like, wow. You know, and you're not aware of it, but you know, you are history makers. And I look forward to that day when what you have done, what you have contributed, will be written in history.
And
well, thank you.
Annabelle is a fighter. You can tell she's a fighter, right? She's trying to take on the world for the next generation. So yes. We just appreciate you ladies so much for coming on and sharing your stories with us, and paving the way for the next generation, trying to make it a little better, which I thought it was a little better, but Annabelle showed me that we still have a little way to go.
One at a time.
Yeah.
So
we just thank you ladies so much for joining us. And once again, this is another episode of Life Chat with Isabel. Goodbye.
Goodbye.